There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 872, February 16th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Alpine ace injured in the face. And we have a NASCAR first, a caution for Jet Dryer spinning at Daytona. Now back to you, Mr. France.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando is okay and has been released from the hospital. McDowell wins the Daytona 500. Driver goes to Panda Express during red flag. We have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And quickly, I want to remind you to please contribute to the F1 Weekly donate button. Your support helps us stay on the air and on the servers. We really appreciate it. And Balraj from Australia, please email me your address. You have a F1 Weekly coffee cup on the way. So please, email me your address. Nath, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you for asking. And first of all, I know Nando is important, but I would like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Washington. Thanks to the birth of their boy, George, I had a day off yesterday, and I made the most of it. Because I was getting very tired of the house arrest, like Carlos Ghosn. Nobody came to my door with the music box. So on Monday, I was at Sebring International Raceway all day long, from morning till evening. And several of the junior Formula series were testing there, like Indy Pro, US Formula 2000, US Formula 4. And I got this information a little bit late. And of course, you know, because of the COVID, one has to be careful. But man, what a surprise I had. And the great honor and opportunity of meeting a Grand Prix racer at Sebring. Who would have thought? The gentleman I met was Hideki Noda. Do you remember him, sir?
Back in the day, yes, sir. Not a big star.
But one of those Japanese samurai F1 racers that have come into the sport on a regular basis. And Mr. Rogers, I don't know why, but he had a big smile on his face when I told him I remember him from his days in Formula Uno. And what brought him here is that his young and very talented daughter, Juju Noda, will race in US Formula 4 this season, which I think is a very good move on his and her part. Last year, she won a race in Danish Formula 4, which is very impressive. And this is a very young girl. But because of the COVID situation, I did not want to push my luck for interviews at this time with any of the drivers. But he did agree for his daughter to be interviewed by F1 Weekly at the opening race of the IndyCar season, which instead of being in St. Petersburg, Florida, will be in Sweet Home, Alabama in April. And if all goes well, I should be there. But wait, there's more. Also at Sebring, testing for the Indy Pro Series was Enzo Fittipaldi, grandson of Emo. His brother Pietro was also there, and you know he took part in a couple of F1 races for replacing Romain Grosjean, and I had a good time chatting with both of them. Enzo was telling me stories about his grandpa and about meeting Nelson Piquet Sr. in Maranello and some of his crazy stories. And to borrow a phrase from Mr. Dan Quayle, I'm sure you remember him also.
I do.
We are now on first name basis and connected on WhatsApp, and that is with Mr. Enzo Fittipaldi, not Dan Quayle. And so pretty soon, Enzo, we will be in the Palatial Studios soon. And I told him, you know, he was telling me he has a lot of stories about his grandpa and Nelson Piquet Sr. So I said, man, just keep thinking of some stories, and in a few weeks we'll talk, and then we'll put them on the F1 Weekly show. So that should be very interesting. But man, I cannot tell you how happy I was there all day, and how, you know, like I feel like a new man by Menin, being at a racetrack, even though it was not Formula One or Indy cars or, you know, World Sports Car Championship. But it's good to be with racing people, especially when they are from around the world, as is the case these days. So I really, really enjoyed. I don't think, unfortunately, this COVID nonsense is going away any soon. So I'm trying to, if I can go to Europe for a Formula One race or whatever, then I'm trying to reallocate resources so I can travel to several major motorsports events here. I'm already booked in for next year's Daytona 500. So that's going to be real boogity boogity. But sir, one thing I will say, Sebring, you know, I've been there a few times, but always for major events. So, you know, you cannot move around everywhere you want. It is a very nice facility. And since this was not a major event, I was able to move around and get a fantastic view of cars in action. And you can get pretty close to cars. And that's what we want when we the peeps go racing and not be treated like surplus to requirement. Now, you've been to Florida many times. Have you been to any of the tracks in this state?
I have not, sir. I'm not a big fan of Florida. I do have family there, and I go there occasionally. But I have not gone to these tracks, Ness, and I apologize to everyone out there for being so slow about this.
My recommendation is, if you get a chance, either do the Sebring once or the Daytona 4 hours. And or the let me tell you one. This I'm not making this up. When I was in California and they first started doing the St. Pete IndyCar Grand Prix, and they were showing an aerial view, and my first reaction was, this is the place where they should have a Formula One race in the U.S. I mean, St. Pete is a very nice town, and the race place in a very nice area. It's just like Long Beach and Monte Carlo, water and nice buildings and very nice atmosphere. So I really enjoy it. But sir, now we have to move on to the most important thing in life. Fernando Alonso. How did that make you feel when you heard that?
Well, my heart skipped a beat. And what you're always, your worst fears all came to fruition. You're scared. And we know, we both know people that have been killed on a nice bicycle ride. It's very dangerous. Believe it or not, there's traffic and people can hit you, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that these things can happen, and that's what I'm always afraid of, getting some bad news when the racing season is not on. You know, like Graham Hill having his plane crash in November, and Carlos Pache getting killed in a plane crash. And, you know, but these are all part of life. But, you know, I'm very happy that this was, it could have been very serious. And we would like to wish your Dios a speedy and full recovery. And this accident took place where he lives now in Lugano, Switzerland. And first ever news that he may not be racing in the first race, but now they're saying he will. And I don't know how much this is true. According to Spanish media outlet Marca, Alonso was run over by a car in a roundabout. So I think more details will come out. But the good thing is that, you know, it's not something serious. And and the way news is coming out, I'm pretty sure he will be at the first race. But, you know, if he misses the first Grand Prix, it will not be the first time he will miss the opening round. Remember, he missed the Australian Grand Prix some years ago after he crashed his car in Formula One car with GP2 engine in pre-season testing in Barcelona. And then, you know, I remember some years ago, Mark Webber also had a bicycling accident somewhere in Tasmania. And I remember that Mr. Horner was very upset with him later on when he revealed that he raced with some broken, you know, ribs or something. Interesting times we are in. But I'm very happy for Nando that it's nothing serious and we will see him race, and we are really looking forward to this. Lugano, you've been to Switzerland, sir, right?
Yes, one of my favorite countries for sure.
Oh, really? Where have you been there?
I've been to one of your favorite places, Interlaken.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, did I mention that Nando is living in Lugano?
You did mention that. You did not.
Okay. Well, just so most people would know, because F1 Weekly listeners are well-informed and educated people, Lugano is in the Italian-speaking area of Switzerland, and this is the area where Clay Regazzoni came from. And Clay Rega was a big, I was a big fan of his because he was driving for Ferrari in the early 70s as teammate to Niki Lauda and almost won the 74 championship at the final round at Watkins Glen, but lost out to Emerson Fittipaldi. Anything else you would like to say about Nando before we move on to freeze frame?
Just that we're all happy here at F1 Weekly Palatial Studios. We wish him the best, and we know he will take home some trophies. We must survive!
Okay, sir, now we come to, the McLaren car was launched, the new McLaren, what is it, MCL35M, and the car number is the same, except they have added M for Mercedes. There's a very nice video on YouTube, courtesy of Miss Natalie Pinkham, where she's interviewing. They've done a nice show with Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo. Have you seen that, sir?
Yes, I have.
Good, good. Did you like it?
I did love it.
Yes, and it will be interesting, and I'm very, very interested in seeing McLaren winning a race with Daniel Ricciardo, and it can be won by Lando Norris also, but I definitely want this Mark to win a race this year. It'll make me very happy. Who will win a race first, Daniel Ricciardo in a McLaren or Fernando Alonso in an Alpine or whatever their car?
Fernando, el macho hombre de España.
Think so.
Positive.
Okay, so that's good. Now, freeze frame for engine development, a proposal to freeze power unit from 2022 has been given seal of approval at the meeting of Formula One Commission. Once in a while, FIA, Formula One, the teams, they all agree on something, which is very good. And the whole idea is to lower cost and the usual PC stuff, carbon neutral, sustainably fueled hybrid units from 2025. And what this has done, the biggest beneficiary of this is Dr. Marco and Red Bull, because they are going to they've reached out an agreement with Honda to use their power plant, and Red Bull is now setting up a new company called Red Bull Powertrains that will service the Honda engine after the company Honda leaves Formula One at the end of this season. And the key objectives of the 2025 power units are, listen to this, creating a more powerful and emotive power unit. And the question I have is, will this engine sound like a racing engine as it used to be, or like a Dyson vacuum cleaner? And having said that, Mr. Rogers, before you call me on Skype, last couple of hours I've been watching the official F1 review of the 2010 season, and that sound, man. Remember that song, What Have They Done to the Rain? One of your favorites, I guess?
Definitely one of my favorites.
My song is What Have They Done to the sound of music. But that's, how many times can you complain about that? And the other thing they want to do is, as a real brainer, significant cost reduction. And then they have this thing, attractiveness to new power unit manufacturers. Audi's name keep coming up, and hopefully one day we will see them in Formula One. As we all know, their heritage goes back to Auto Union days, so it will be a welcome return. Auto Union, Porsche, who has been very successful in Formula One, one of these names would be very, very nice, brings a lot of credibility. Toyota has been running their hybrid engine in Le Mans. Hopefully they can come back. And I'm very disappointed that Honda is leaving, but what can you do? You know what they should really do? Simplify this as much as they can while keeping their PC-ness. But I want them to do two things. A, bring back the sound and reduce the cost for something like an Ilmore or a Cosworth or any other independent manufacturer can jump in so we can have more garagistas. Do you agree on that, sir?
I completely agree. I just hate to burst the bubble because everybody, all the manufacturers are under such big pressure with this electrification, which I think is just a fad and might not last, but it is the pie, or should I say the soup du jour. So we're stuck with that. But yes, all the manufacturers are so focused on electrification and their respective governments of each said country is pushing for that because of the carbon footprint narrowing to zero. So there's a lot going on, and unfortunately, racing is definitely going to be or become the stepchild.
Well, you know, I have no doubt that future of passenger cars definitely and trucks is electrification, and I think it's a good idea. But, you know, that should not spill over into motorsports. Motorsports is entertainment, and you're not going to save the world by not having V10 engines in Formula One. And that's where I have an issue where this political correctness just goes out of control and takes over everything. Do you remember some years ago they wanted to widen the space runoff area at Monza? And you've been to Monza. There is no shortage of trees there. So that safety move would have required cutting some trees. Oh boy, that was a big brouhaha from the tree huggers. And it's, you know, I mean, if you're cutting 20 trees, they can plant another 30 trees somewhere else. Let some people enjoy what they enjoy most. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Rogers?
I do know what you're saying, Nasser. What we're looking for is balance. So what I'm thinking, for me, would make sense, as we lower our carbon footprint as a manufacturer, you should be given carbon tokens so you could run a V10 or a V12 in motorsports. You see what I'm talking about, Nasser. Give and take, love and hugs. But no, everything has to be, let's say, everything has to be logical and it has to be pertaining to regular automobiles when that's really a bunch of crap. I don't want, when I get in my Prius, I'm not thinking about racing. But when I go to the track, I want nothing but loudness, smelliness. I want to smell castor oil, castor bean. I want brake fluid in my face. I want it all.
Yes. Well, maybe racing should get Head and Shoulders as the series sponsor so racing can be pH balanced. You know what I'm saying?
Unfortunately, I do indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see. I know they're trying to reduce the cost and do this. And at one time, there was some talk of they would take out one of the units. You know, there are so many things in it now. MGK, MGU, this and that. That will create more sound. But we'll see. But I guess, you know, being PC and being cool and being re-elected is all these people want. And we can go on this stuff, but I think we're going to move on to better things like F1 Saturday Night Fever. Plans for Saturday sprint races gained broad support from all parties when F1 Commission did a video conference. Well, I don't know if it was Zoom or WhatsApp past Thursday. You know, that idea of reverse grid, that was shot down by all the teams, and who can blame them? What is reported that when they have these, what Stefano Domenicali wants is three races, sprint races on Saturday this year in Montreal, Monza, and Brazil. And apparently some sort of points will be awarded, but the race result will determine the grid. Now, if they want to do a reverse grid, you know, like in GP2 and Formula 2 and some other series, they do a partial reverse grid, the first 10 or first 8, depending on the series. But back in the 70s, in Formula 2, they would have two races per weekend, and the grid for the second race was a complete reversal of the race one. Something like that would be very interesting. There's no question about it. But as somebody once said, Formula 1 teams cannot agree on what day of the week it is, let alone something as drastic as this. But one thing I would like to say, Mr. Rogers, I'm an old-timer on a few things, old school on a few things. I really do not want them messing up with qualifying or the race format too much. You know, if they want to bring the race format from 2 hours to 90 minutes, I'm all for it. But I really remember some years ago they tried that Mickey Mouse qualifying thing and it was given up after like two races.
My favorite.
And then when they tried the one car at a time for one lap, like at Indy 500, I mean, that was also a complete disaster. What we have right now is pretty good. I like that. Okay, sir. Okay, there, you know, the PC-ness going everywhere, but this one makes sense. Cap on money. So there is now also talk. And, you know, this is all happening because of the times we are in when money is free rolling like it does sometimes. Then, you know, nobody cares about anything. Do you remember when these teams were spending over $1 million in car launches?
I loved it.
Yeah, the amazing launches that were arranged by Benetton and Lewis. I remember when they revealed the 2007 McLaren car, there was a big shindig in Valencia arranged by McLaren, and that didn't work out pretty well. But that's the way it goes sometimes, Mr. Rogers. And we all know the cap is budget cap is $145 million, and I think it's going to come down on a sliding scale. I'd like to know more details on how they have handled the Ferrari love bonus that was given them. Apparently, it's still there, but it's being reduced, and I think that is also on a sliding scale. I have not heard much about it. But, sir, now some good news. The Trulli train has arrived first at the Dubai platform. Enzo Trulli, Bambino of Yarno, has won the UAE Formula 4 Championship at the season finale at the Dubai Autodrome. And most of these races, they were also doing around this time rounds of Asian Formula 3 in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Most of them are on YouTube, which I've been enjoying. So if anybody wants to check it out, they can do that. Now, Mr. Rogers, you have to talk about your favorite race, Daytona 500.
It was exciting. The first 15 laps were pretty exciting, Nasser. You got to admit that.
You know, last year I did not watch the race at all. I don't know where I was, but most of the time I've always watched the Daytona 500 in its entirety. And this year, you know, they had a big accident at the start and it red flag and then came the rains. So I moved on. But Penske drivers were headed for a 1-2 halfway. I think it was more than halfway through the final lap. But then they did a Lewis and Nico in Montmelo and gave the victory to men from Glendale, Arizona, Michael McDowell. Michael becomes the third IndyCar driver to win at Big D. Mario Andretti and AJ Foyt are the other two. And let me tell you how long it takes for certain drivers. Many, many years ago, I don't know, definitely more than 10 years ago, I was talking to a gentleman who was involved at that time for many, many years in motorsports PR at a very high professional level. And his comment to me then was that Michael McDowell was the most talented driver he had ever worked with. And this guy had worked with a lot of big-name drivers, both in sports cars and Indy cars in the U.S. So I'm very happy for Mr. Michael McDowell. And this was interesting, Mr. Rogers. In one of the sprint races before the main event, the jet dryers were on the track, and they had to bring out a caution as one of them spun and went down the banking. And what is even more amazing, Montoya was not even around. Did you witness that, sir?
I did. It was interesting. But I also want to get back to Michael McDowell. That was his first win in NASCAR. And I believe he'd been in NASCAR for 14 years. Those wins don't come that easy. But when they do come, it's exciting, and you're right. The guy is very talented. It's been an interesting career, and to win the Big D, I think is very, very exciting for him. I'm very happy for him and his family.
Yeah, you know, to win your first race in NASCAR at Daytona is like winning your first Formula One race at Monte Carlo.
Exactly, and I thought it was a fantastic finish, even though there was a lot of tit for tat on the last lap. Logano got the shaft, let's say. But it was an exciting race.
even though it was rain delayed or lightning delayed for many, many hours. And like you said, a lot of people moved on, but they always replay the race in NASCAR on Fox Sports number 2. So if you ever want to watch it again, Fox Sports 2 will replay the race in NASCAR. And that way you can finish your Pap Blue Ribbon and the other 6 hot dogs.
Yeah, you know, these two Penske, no, the two kids, Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski, there was a time some years ago, believe it or not, I used to watch all NASCAR, Winston Cup or whatever this called, you know, Sprint Cup, and I don't know what the name is now, and the Busch League, and which became the Nationwide or Xfinity. And I mean, I used to watch all the truck races. But I remember some years ago when both Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski were in the second tier, which I think is these days called Xfinity Series. They were really, really doing a great job. And it was pretty obvious that they are going to become superstars in the main league, which I'm very happy for them. And Brad Keselowski, every time he talks about Roger Penske, he's the only driver I've ever heard him address Roger Penske as Mr. Penske. But that's good for him.
And real quickly, before we go to Gary, I do want to mention that it was 20 years since the Intimidator lost his life at Daytona.
Yes, sir. I was watching that race, and that was very sad. Real, real huge loss for... I will never forget, you know, after Ayrton Senna's death, I don't know if it was the same weekend where there was a race. Maybe there was, because, you know, those races come early morning here in the U.S. There was an NASCAR race shortly after Senna's passing, and Dale Earnhardt Sr. won the race. And when he got out of the car, the first thing he said is, "I would like to dedicate this to Ayrton Senna. He was a great racer." And I thought that was very classy.
Very classy indeed. Very classy indeed, Nass. And on that note, and I'm really glad you mentioned that, let's hear from Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So as the dust settles on the Lewis Hamilton contract pantomime, it's worth remembering there was also a delay in the re-signing of Toto Wolff as team principal and CEO. The 3-year deal signed in December no doubt helped the Hamilton negotiations. But what about Wolff's long-term future? Well, he's become one of the most powerful individuals in F1 and is flying high. But like Hamilton, he recently mused about the commitment required on a personal level, citing 280 hotel nights and 1,000 hours of flying in a typical season. Wolff's proclaimed for several years that he will leave F1 at some point, telling F1.com back in 2016. From my fundamental setup, I like challenges and I'm not attracted by the glitz and exposure of Formula One at all. Probably, on the contrary, it complicates my life because there's the risk that it sucks you in a bit, so I'm fighting that. One day I will leave the sport and return to what I've done before and be a private equity person. Well, Toto is a petrolhead and former racer. He decided to quit his racing career after following in the rear exhaust pipes of fellow countryman Alexander Wurz and realising he was not at that level. Instead, he focused on his investment companies March 15 and later March 16 and concentrated on investing in IT companies. Then he came to understand the potential opportunities in motorsports with investments in Williams F1, German HWAG and BRR Rallying. This enabled him to fuse his racing passion with his business nous. He also co-owned a sports management company with Mika Hakkinen, managing, amongst others, one Valtteri Bottas. Wolff rubs shoulders in the paddock with many billionaires, and none more so than his old friend Lawrence Stroll. Wolff may harbour ambitions to join the Billionaires Club, if for no other reason to finance his 4-year-old son's future Formula One career. After all, the lad has the racing genes from both parents. A few years ago, Bernie Ecclestone lambasted the new crop of team bosses, saying, "The trouble today is we're getting people whose intention is slowly to make money. Toto Wolff is probably the best example. A bit rich, excuse the pun, coming from the man who ruthlessly exploited F1 to personally gain a multi-billion dollar fortune." So the question is, how is Toto doing on the potential billionaire status? Well, at 49, he's already halfway there with his net worth estimated at between $450 million to $580 million. Wolff, no doubt, has his eye on a bumper payday when Ineos founder Sir Jim Ratcliffe makes him an offer he can't refuse, for his 33.3% stake in the Mercedes F1 team. Or Lawrence Stroll comes calling with a bucket load of cash. In the meantime, the money keeps on rolling in, with his $20 million investment back in October in Aston Martin now worth a staggering $38 million. Yep, a paper profit of $18 million in just 8 weeks. When Daimler announced a deal giving them a 20% shareholding in Aston Martin, the share price doubled. Analysts are sceptical about Aston Martin's future, but speculators are it seems, not deterred. Rumours persist, and for the lawyers listening, these are rumours and speculation, not accusations, that Wolff was privy to information prior to the Daimler announcement, either through contacts at Daimler AG or indeed Stroll himself. Either way, nice work if you can get it. So with a 3-year deal under his belt and looking to leave a formidable legacy with the Mercedes domination in the hybrid area, substantial investments and a happy family life, for the time being, all looks good in the world of Toto Wolff. On a footnote, Toto showed his human side when he told the Finding Mastery podcast. When you have cameras pointed at you, there's a danger of ego running away with you, and you need to realise that. You need to be able to come back into your hotel room, look in the mirror and say, I've been a little bit of a dick today. That one I got wrong. Well said, Toto. That's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, keep up the good work. And now, here is the mystery guest interview.
Okay, Mr. Eric Bouyer, first of all, thank you for joining F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Obviously, when you're such a good Grand Prix atmosphere and weather, so we're happy to be here, you know.
French Grand Prix history goes back to 1906. Is Paul Ricard the long-term future of this event?
Well, you're very well obviously informed. Yes, 1906, that was the first Grand Prix in near Le Mans, if I remember. The Paul Ricard now is a track where hosting the French Grand Prix. Obviously, we still have a contract running for another 3 years, so everything can be possible after that.
Are you happy with the attendance and corporate support at this time?
Well, yes, obviously we always want more, you know. I mean, the Grand Prix was an amazing success for the return, you know, and obviously the second year is always more difficult for a Grand Prix, but as long as you know you have more years behind, you can gain back, you know, the notoriety and the awareness you need to receive, obviously, the public.
Your educational background is aerospace engineering. How and when did you get the racing bug?
Well, I was you were talking about 1906 first Grand Prix in Le Mans. I was born near Le Mans, so in a city called Laval, and obviously when I was 9 years old, I was racing with some remote control cars, and this is how I started, and everything started from there.
Okay. Ron Dennis once described Formula One as a piranha pool. In terms of politics and cutthroat nature of this business, do you really need to be a mean shark to survive and succeed in Formula One?
I think any business in the world, you know, is obviously a piranha pool, you know, and I think Formula One obviously has a lot of egos and a lot of attention, and one of the particularities of Formula One, you know, is you put the 10 most competitive racing competitors in the same area, so they obviously are very close to each other, and they do tend to develop ego war, or whatever it called. Maybe some of them with a piranha behavior, yeah.
You know, Eddie Jordan once made a comment saying that egos in Formula One are so big that you can float the Titanic on it. Is that true?
Well, I would say I do tend to agree with Eddie for once.
Okay, very good. Okay, your time at McLaren, in your observation, what were the main issues there apart from Honda getting all the blame?
I don't think it's true to say that, but you know, it's a long story and a past story, and I'm not sure I want to develop that story, but it was great years for me. It's a great bunch of people, and I have many friends there, so I think past is the past, and now let's move forward.
But I do want to ask one question from the past. Did anybody from Honda say anything to McLaren management when Alonso was very vocal about their product especially after the GP2 engine comment at Suzuka?
I can't comment the past, and this is I don't want to say anything about this. You know, it's a past story now, and again we have to move on.
Understand? Okay, you were involved with Gravity Management. Of all the drivers managed by Gravity, who were the best?
I would say the one who have been winning after that, whatever they were competing in. You know, I mean, I remember Marco Wittmann, you know, being part of it, and he's been double DTM champion, so it's a good driver. And obviously, today I'm proud to see Romain still in Formula One and Esteban Ocon in Formula One having a great career, you know. So I was the one picking up Esteban when he was 12 years old, you know, and I still remember that interview with him, and to see him today in the F1 paddock. Being a mature and professional F1 driver is just a little bit of a happiness and pride, you know.
I spoke to him yesterday and he said exactly what you're saying. Okay, he is a great talent and product of French racing system. How do you rate him, though, in your opinion?
I do rate him very high, obviously. He's a future for France, definitely. I do rate him very high. So he will match performance with Daniel. He's now very much mature and comfortable with his F1 life. He grew up now in the best team environment, you know. I mean, he has been in the best days in Force India, or Racing Point now. He spent a few years with Mercedes GP, which is the best team organization today, and he's joining a car manufacturer, Renault, which is the best place to be when you're an F1 driver. So he will do very well.
Are you still in touch with Gerard Lopez?
Everybody. I'm still in touch with everybody, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, if I remember correctly, Kimi Raikkonen was racing for you when he made that famous comment, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing." Is he the most unique driver you have ever dealt with?
They are all unique, you know. Obviously, Kimi has a special character, maybe a bit different, but they're all unique, you know. And I've been lucky enough to work with guys like Robert Kubica, Fernando Alonso, Jenson Button, but also, you know, obviously Kimi Raikkonen, but also Romain Grosjean, Bruno Senna, some others, you know. So they're all unique. And Kimi is, everybody's fan of him, you know, so because obviously he has this kind of rebel attitude, which is very attracting.
Now, you're involved in promotion of the French Grand Prix, so if somebody is planning to go to Europe or travel to one Grand Prix, what would be the main reasons to come to the French Grand Prix?
There is many reasons. This is first the summer race, we call it. Everybody in the world knows the French Riviera, okay? And I'm pretty sure everybody wants, at least once in their life, in his life, to spend holidays there. So that's a good already opportunity to do it. And I think, to be fair, you know, it's obviously being at the end of June, you know, just before summer. It's a great place to be to enjoy the French hospitality. We have obviously a lot of activities, you know. I mean, we are one of these new Grand Prix model for Liberty, and I mean, our paddock is full of activities, exhibition shows, but also on track, off track, and you can really enjoy a great weekend, you know, and actually a great week.
And Paul Ricard, famous for pasties also.
Yes, and actually, I should maybe not, but I do encourage everybody to try at least pasties or Ricard, actually, once.
I love it. Okay, final question. Who will win a race first, Renault or McLaren?
Who's going what, sorry?
Who will win a race first, Renault or McLaren?
The best team over the other one.
Okay.
And I wish them both all the best.
Okay, finally, how about our listeners for our podcast? We have listeners all over the world. Anything you want to say to racing fans?
Well, I think F1 is going into great years, great time coming. We can see, you know, the fight on the grid and the fight for the title is getting more intense. Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, but also we have seen obviously a second pack, you know, which is very intense battle, you know, there. So great drivers, great personalities, great shows now, because you can see even here in Abu Dhabi, but now it's everywhere, you know. I mean, F1 Liberty said you have to, we need to have 22 Super Bowls, and I think we are now in the verge of getting 22 Super Bowls. So the experience as a spectator, as a TV spectator, is definitely something very attracting and very impressive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mystery. We do appreciate it. Nasser, any final thoughts? We're moving into the unveiling of many cars. Alpine's coming up. The press release for Aston Martin came out today. They're on March 3rd. So all this is all lots of ticker tape and confetti, but really, it's when the tires hit the track.
Well, I am very, very excited just from going to Sebring, you know, to see young kids racing there. And, you know, another good thing is, look at all the positive things in life, Mr. Rogers. February this year has only 28 days. So in how many days are left? Like 12, today is 16, right? So in like at about 12, 13 days, we're in March. And what is happening in March? We have motorsports, Formula One official 3 days of testing in Bahrain. And before March is out, what do we have, Mr. Rogers?
We have Fernando.
El Machismo. Actually, you know, when I was watching this, some of this racing action before they also showed a 5-minute segment of Fernando winning on debut with Ferrari. And that was in Bahrain. You remember that, huh?
I do. So technically, we have 39 days and 12 hours before the first race in Bahrain. So we still have a month and a half, Nasser. So just relax, take it easy, throw a couple of more on the Barbie.
No, but there is preseason testing, and that's very exciting. And you can watch some of that on YouTube, courtesy of Sky Sports.
Yes, everybody's going to watch Fernando become more machismo.
Yes, he will become more machismo and somebody else will become more world champion. And that's how it's going to go this season. And even he knows that.
And I guess you heard today that it came out that there is a clause in Max Verstappen's contract.
Yes, Dr. Mark has finally conceded that. And I don't think Max is going to go, as much as I would like to, but I don't think he's going to go to Mercedes as long as Lewis is there. Because I think the last thing Toto Wolff wants, you know, Toto Wolff is not a Formula One warrior like Frank Williams and Ron Dennis, where they will say, hey, you're driving for the team, we don't care who wins. I think Toto Wolff cares about the image of the Mercedes brand, and he does not want cage rattling. I think what he saw with Nico and Lewis was more than enough that he can handle. Maybe he can handle more, but we all know what's going to happen if you put these two guys in the team. So why not suck it up with 8-9 championship with Lewis? And even then, Max will be obviously will be without a championship and would still be 27 years old? And then he can come and win anything and everything. What I'm really disappointed, Mr. Rogers, I mean, we know what we have in Formula One right now. And the real exciting prospect now is this Japanese kid, Yuki Tsunoda, who I think is out of control in a good sense. But I'm a little disappointed in the drivers that are in Formula 2 right now. I don't see what you call a whippersnapper or the next Lewis or the next Max. And it's the same story pretty much in Formula 3 also. So we need some new blood that can come and take over the scenery. That will be interesting.
Very good. Very good. I agree with that. So,
and on a happy note, I don't know if it's a happy note for you, but I'm looking at the schedule of IndyCar racing, and most of the races of IndyCars are with IndyCars, Indy Lights, Indy Pro, US Formula 4, US Formula 2000, and the US Formula 4. And there is also a series here called, I saw a car saying Formula Regional Americas, which, they have in Europe also. I mean, Formula Regional Europe. So there's a lot of racing series, and the final race of IndyCars, I believe, was moved to Long Beach. But there is a race at Laguna Seca, I think in September. So I'm seriously thinking of coming to that race.
Very good. That's a good idea. That way we could have our Ortega burger with a side of deep fried jalapenos.
Yes, your favorite. Most places I go for breakfast in Florida, Cracker Barrel, I guess they've never heard of jalapenos, at least not in the Florida market. I don't know what's up with that.
You'll have to take that up with your congressman.
Yes.
So there you go. So Nasser, outstanding job at Sebring. Keep up the good work. We have more next week. The podcast continues forever and ever. It never ends, folks. And we're training our children right now to take over in the year 2121. So, Nass.
We want to thank everybody who listens.
Exactly. I do want to thank everybody who listens. I want to thank everybody who contributes. I just want to thank people. And after that, I get hungry, and you know where I go. I want to see everybody at the hot dog stand. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.